This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbroadcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates.
Hey, what's up, and welcome to a slightly late version of our podcast, which is called Serious Issues, a weekly comic book podcast. My name is Levins.
My name is Siobhan.
It sure is, and it was a public holiday in Sydney yesterday and other parts of Australia. It was like a weird, I don't even know what it was for.
It's Labor Day.
Labor Day, all right.
For those of us who labor.
Who go through labor, right?
Exactly. You're welcome.
We had a public holiday, and I refused to record. Instead, I decided to get in the car and drive 3 hours to visit my grandparents for the first time in 2 years.
Oh, that's nice.
That was fun. Good to do a long drive with children.
Always a pleasure.
But if you were in Sydney over the weekend, you may have come to the Oz Comic Con, and Siobhan and I was on one panel. Siobhan was on like eight.
Six. I was on six panels.
You hosted most of them too, right?
No, I only, I moderated two. Mm-hmm. And one was me sort of interviewing Wayne Nichols while he drew.
Yep.
And then I was just a guest on the other ones.
You moderated the one I was on. You did a great job.
I did.
You talked about Batman's dick a lot around
No,
children.
I didn't. Did I? No, no.
Well, you raised your eyebrows furiously
multiple
times throughout the recording. And
I can't be held responsible for my eyebrows.
Everyone knew why you were raising your eyebrows. Bat-dong. So, Siobhan, it was an insane week of comics last week.
Oh, my God, yes.
So I was happy to have an extra day to try and get through everything. Which I did moments before hitting record.
Nice.
If this is the first episode of Serious Issues you've ever listened to, basically what we do is we read almost all the comic books that come out each week, and then we go through them and let you know which ones we liked, which ones we think you should be reading too, and then the others.
Yup.
And we call the first segment, in which we review all of the new number one issues that came out last week, we call it First Things First. And I know everyone is waiting with bated breath for us to weigh in on yet another DC book that has been dividing people on one side or the other side of a fence. But I thought, let's start positive. And I thought maybe we could talk about a book that I know we both loved as our first entry on First Things First. And so I'm going to turn to Image, who this week
Excellent.
Published the first issue of Man Eaters by Chelsea Kane,
mm-hmm.
teaming up with her... Mockingbird artist Kate Niemczyk and colorist Rochelle Rosenberg for a monster book about teenage girls. I'm going to let Siobhan describe this in excited detail.
I mean, the first thing that is exciting is that she's put the full names of the entire creative team on the front page.
Not where I was expecting this to begin, but sure, yeah, it is a good.
I liked that. Second thing, already exciting and already like, cool, I'm reading a Chelsea Kane comic, is the front inside page that's
yep.
still the cover.
Page you know two, if mean. You count the cover as page one.
There you go. It's already part of, like, there's no ad, there's no obvious sort of buy, blah, blah, blah. It's like a public service announcement. And I just like the way that Chelsea Kane always wants to use every page and convey information in an interesting way. And so already you sort of know that there's a cat attack because of this. And cats are caused by a horrible disease called Toxoplasmosis X.
My wife has actually had toxoplasmosis in the past. She got it because apparently a cat was near her food when she was in Bali one time. And she was sick for weeks.
Ugh.
She didn't turn into a monster though.
Yeah, cool. So she didn't turn into a giant panther when she got her period? Is that not what happened?
Well, that's what happens in Man-Eaters.
Yes. periods have been cured because they were causing girls to be turned into monsters. And so finally they did something about this shit. But every now and again, a teenage girl still gets her period and turns into a monster.
And so
come on.
This book, which it's really sad reading this, knowing that Chelsea's Vision series was cancelled, where she talked about how much it was going to be about a father and a daughter relationship, because that's also what we get here. We get a young girl, a teenage girl, and her policeman father,
mm-hmm.
In this world of monsters that are period based, but we get some great interactions between the two of them. And it's all, like, if you loved all of the fun little infographics that were in each issue of Chelsea Kane and Kate Niemczyk's Mockingbird run, there are plenty of those here, and they're as fun as the ones in Mockingbird. They do so much for world building, but also, like, mm-hmm. you know, do so much just to make me giggle as well.
Exactly. This is what I was trying to communicate, but doing a poor job of exactly this. It's so fun.
Basically the big kind of, like, after we see all these horrific things that have happened because girls have turned into panthers that then eat their families, and we learn about periods being cured, but then at the end we learn that they're not entirely cured. Sometimes people still get their kids, girls still get their periods, and thus are still at prone to becoming monsters. And that's exactly what happens to the hero of this story, the teenage girl who we've met at the start. What a great first issue.
Yeah, so fun. Just good fun.
This is Chelsea Kane. I mean, if you count the six-page Jessica Jones story she wrote for a Marvel annual, mm-hmm. This is her 10th comic. Because there are only 8 issues of Mockingbird, the Jessica Jones thing, and then this is her 10th comic. And she writes like someone who has perfected the kind of comic that she's trying to write.
Yep.
It's just
she really gets it. She really gets the medium. I don't really understand why or how, but I think DC should poach her.
Yeah, I know. That would definitely put them in my
If DC was smart, get her to write backup.
Anything. Any fucking anything.
Yeah.
I would be happy though if she just, like, if Manny just does really well and she just does create her own stuff forever.
Oh, yes.
Because this is awesome, and it's absolutely like her just kind of no holds barred telling a story that you can tell that she's, like, you know, wanted to tell for ages. She mentioned in an interview how there's not much stuff for girls to read specifically about their periods, and so she wanted to fill that void for her own daughters, and that's kind of where the inspiration for this came from. As a dude who read it, like, it's a fun thing to read anyway. It's not like I don't get it because I didn't have my period.
Yeah, exactly. I feel like you could understand the basic concept.
So if you're a dude out there, gotta get Man-Eaters.
Absolutely, absolutely. Like, good lord, if you all just look at this book and go like, oh, it's clearly just for chicks, then you're really missing out. Billies.
I just looked at the ad on the back. The ad is for Estropure. Put some hair on his chest. It's surgeon estrogen-free water for boys. There's so much love about this book. It's great. Chelsea Kane fucking rules, and so does Kate Niemczyk. They're a great team, and I loved everything about this issue.
Absolutely.
Real good shit. We also got another number one from Image this week that you probably didn't pick up. It was the latest in the regular one-shots we get every time Kieran Gillen and Jamie McKelvey finish an arc of The Wicked and the Divine.
No, I didn't pick that up.
And basically what they do is they get a guest artist. So this time we got Ryan Kelly. And we got The Wicked and the Divine, 1373 AD, in which we see an iteration of all of the gods. The Wicked and the Divine is a kind of like this cyclical nature. Every 90 years... gods visit the earth. They are powerful as gods, and then they die after 2 years. They go crazy from the power. And the 40 or so issues of Wicked and Divine have kind of told us the history of these gods and, you know, the extent of their powers and how many times this infinite loop has kind of gone on and on and on. And we've gotten all these great kind of like flashbacks back to the gods appearing in different timelines. And so in 1373, this is all about the Black Plague.
Yes, please.
It is such a good issue. And what I love is that, like, you know, as we discover more and more in the regular series, they're then able to kind of go back and build the world and the kind of concept of these gods more by showing how others used these powers or died because of these powers. It's so fucking cool.
I wish
you read this series.
Same. As it's closing out and I'm hearing everyone sort of... praise it so highly, I'm like, nah, I shouldn't have given up on issue 3. Damn it.
This was probably my favorite of all the year based one shots, and I'd like to hear from anyone who's been keeping up with the series who agrees with me, because sometimes these can be, they lend themselves way too well to the language you know, 1,000, 2,000 years ago, so it can be a bit impenetrable. But this was bang on the money. It was a really riveting and cool and crazy one shot. So good.
Cool.
So that's The Wicked and the Divine, 1373 AD. And of course, this series has one arc left, which is very exciting and scary. There's an advertisement on the back for Kieran Gillen's next book, which comes out in December, which is just called Die. Looks really cool.
Poorly timed, along with After Die.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe we'll get who's it. Doing the art?
It is someone whose last name is Hans.
Cool.
Someone's Hans? Mm-hmm. I don't know. I'm sure someone could look it up and let us know.
Cool.
So let's do it. That's enough positivity.
All right.
although apparently you liked this.
I didn't like it, but it made me feel intensely nostalgic because it was like, what if Bendis wrote Identity Crisis or something like that? Because it had mad talking heads, but also had some horrific murders.
So this is Heroes in Crisis, the latest crisis event from DC. This was kind of mentioned a long time ago. It was going to be about PTSD in the DC universe.
It's about giving DC fans PTSD.
Yeah, exactly. But it was going to be like a clinic where heroes go when they kind of overcome their mental problems that they get from fighting all these crimes and seeing all these awful things through their crime fighting lives. And like that as a concept is pretty interesting, I guess.
Of course.
But it's going to be written by Tom King, who to write this issue with his regular collaborator, Clay Mann. And,
who knocks it out of the park. Clay Mann is very good. I think that's why I give this a pass.
That first, the big title page where you see like the flash of Superman whizzing past the crop.
Yep.
The crops that spill out Heroes in Crisis. Great colors too by Timoteo Moore.
Absolutely.
This was not what I was expecting from this event at all.
I looked at spoilers like 2 weeks ago, so this was exactly what I expected from this.
Right. Why'd you do that to yourself?
Because I don't care about it.
Okay, right.
So someone was like, oh, I saw who died. And I was like, ooh, who died? Google. Beep, 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 beep.
So in case you have been living under a rock and avoiding the controversy caused by this issue, fucking heaps of people die in this issue.
Mad people die. All our favorites. Hotspot. Not Hotspot. I love Hotspot. Nah, Blue Jay. My best friend Blue Jay.
So yeah, after we see a bunch of heroes that I've definitely not read anything from ever, we see their bodies lying dead in a field. It then kind of like... Basically the whole thing is kind of Batman, Wonder Woman, and Superman stumbling upon all of these murders. Two of those murdered include Arsenal, Roy Harper, is it his name?
Mm-hmm.
And the recently resurrected Wally West, aka The Flash.
You can't really kill a Flash. He'll show back up at some point, I'm sure.
I mean, yeah, totally. It is dumb to say how silly it is to have all these deaths in a comic book. But, you know, we learn that the whole thing is kind of like, it's half Batman, Wonder Woman, and Superman discovering these bodies and reacting to finding all the deaths. And then we also see a fight between Harley Quinn and Booster Gold. And, of course, we side with Booster to begin with, even though he's a very poorly written Tom King Booster. But by the end, we learn that Harley is actually trying to kill him because he was potentially responsible for all of these murders that we've seen so far in the book.
I'm finding it hard to really raise any kind of outrage. It does remind me of that sort of Identity Crisis era of DC.
Yes.
So I almost am just like, yeah, well, it's just another in a line of horrible, grisly murders that sometimes happen in the DC universe, and then Superman has to solve a horrible crime. I think it's like it's unsubtle.
Yeah, big surprise for a Tom King book to be unsubtle.
It's not, I think, the sensitive look at post-traumatic stress disorder in superheroes that I think a lot of people wanted and were led to believe that this book would be.
So we thought it was going to be about this clinic or whatever called Sanctuary.
Which is apparently also just the name of the robot, but maybe also many robots?
Yeah, it's really strange. And the first we see of this thing, which has apparently been doing lots of good for heroes in the past, which we've seen none of. The first thing we're introduced to Sanctuary is when all these people have died in it.
Better security needed at Sanctuary.
But it just kind of seems so pointless, especially with the Wally West thing. He just came back. Why kill him? I don't understand.
Because they brought him back, but they didn't know what they were fucking doing, because there was already another Wally West, and they're like, oh, we can't kill the black Wally West, but we've got two Wally Wests.
Yeah.
I know, we just have to kill Wally West again. And just across the universe, you could just hear teen girls.
Yeah.
Well, not teen girls, girls about my age who love Wally. No!
So last week, Tom King shot Dick Grayson in the head. This week he killed Roy Harper and Wally West.
Mate.
Who's left from the Titans? Wonder Girl.
Does
whatever?
Donna Troy even exist Troy? In this Who world? Knows? I think she
not,
does.
Not for long. Come I'm going to read this. Read this with
oh,
a morbid
I thought really
curiosity.
Was some kind of like he was killing off the Titans across many books, and then that was all leading towards some big thing like Deathstroke. That would be cool, but that's definitely not what it is.
No, because really, all it's about is like, hey man, death's crazy, and you need to like. Just check yourself before you wreck yourself.
And it's always going to happen in a really horrifyingly unexpected way.
And there's no such thing as Sanctuary. And yeah. Also, Harley Quinn, huge revelation, Harley Quinn hates pudding.
There's a bad joke. Ah, oh, the poor guy. That's a bad joke. He's not very funny. Okay, but do you know what I did like?
What's that? Justice League Odyssey?
Yeah.
So can you turn me down on your headphones? Because I can hear me, which means our listeners are going to be able to hear two me's.
Oh, no, that's too many. Is that better?
Too many me's. Yeah, that's better. I'm gonna keep reading Heroes in Crisis with like a morbid curiosity just because it was...
Yeah, of course.
It's an event book. How do we not read an event book? We're part of the
But also, level. Also, Clayman is genuinely great. He's great in the action sequences. He's great at just drawing...
Murders.
Good-looking superheroes. He's drawn some horrible, grisling murders.
and pie. He's very good at drawing diner pie.
Yep. And he did a good Harley Quinn.
Who needs Donna Troy when you've got diner pie?
Absolutely.
Yeah, who also else from great? Also from DC this week was the first issue of Justice League Odyssey, written by Joshua Williamson with art by Stepan Sejic. Stepan Sejic. A Czech artist, I think. Justice League Odyssey is a book spinning out of Dark Knight's metal and Justice League No Justice. But hey, don't go just yet, because it's a like bonkers kind of space comic in which Cyborg and Starfire set out into like ghost space or something weird.
And
space.
Azrael.
And Azrael, he's a stowaway. Some like weird ghost space that Jessica Cruz, the Green Lantern, has been put in charge of like looking after, but it's really, really boring until they suddenly show up in her airspace.
And they're also flying Brainiac's head.
They're flying Brainiac's head, and they're following a voice that they learn at the end of the issue belongs to Darkseid.
Yes, please.
Yeah, this was really great.
This was great, and it turns out they're like ancient
like
gods.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, the old gods. Are now Cyclops, who's like the machine, and Starfire,
Cyborg.
Who's the goddess. Who did I say?
You said Cyclops.
Cyclops. Fuck. Fire me.
Idiot.
And Azrael as well. This is really great.
Yeah, really great.
I was not expecting to like it.
Stefan Sejic is like the best. He makes Starfire's costume look so cool, and he makes Jessica Cruz look great.
Yeah, agree. Totally agree.
But I haven't even talked about my favorite comic of the week, which is the preview of the Grant Morrison Liam Sharp.
Yep.
Green
I was
Lantern.
Looking forward to bringing this up with you.
Oh
yeah,
my
so
God.
We get like in the back of some DC books this week, we got like four pages of Grant Morrison's book, which is being kind of described as like space cops. And that's exactly what this preview is. Which
but
is
like cool, like European comic space cops. Liam Sharp's so good. Grant Morrison's so funny. This looks so good. I feel like emotional about it.
Coming out next month. Looking forward to that one for sure.
Guys,
Siobhan's on board.
I really am.
The Green is it just called the Green Lantern? The Green Lantern in November. Look forward to that one.
It looks perfect. It looks perfect.
Let's move over to Marvel right now for a couple of ones and zeros. some binary comics they released this week. We have the latest in the Infinity Warps tie-ins. This is Iron Hammer, which combines Thor and Iron Man. Did you read this, Shalon?
Like half of it.
It was written by Al Ewing, who writes the entire thing in... who's a really famous Thor writer?
Walt Simonson?
Yeah, it's just written like a Walt Simonson kind of white book where everything... Or even just a Stan Lee Marvel comic, really, where there's just every thought of the character is... you know, we have thought bubbles. I love a thought bubble in a comic. I can't fault that. And we also have... what's his name? Ramon Rosanes on art and colours by Jason Keith. Yeah, so basically this is like a set long, long ago... In far off Norway, in which some Sigurd Stark, the billionaire technologist, is basically, I don't know,
it's the
origin stories together, but he's kind of Thorish.
Boring.
Thoring.
We get it. We get the idea. You don't need to tell us exactly how this guy who's not really Tony Stark or Thor becomes both of them. Lame.
Did you like that Malekith was crossed with Mandarin? So he's like Malekith with heaps of rings on.
All my two favorite characters, Mandarin and Malekith. Now they're one guy. Wow.
What about Madame Hell? So it's Hell and Madame Mask.
They're all bad. They're all bad. All of them are bad.
I'm a DJ, so I love a good mashup.
I'm putting that at your headstone.
This is not a good mashup, but I have to admire Al Ewing's dedication to making it read like an older comic.
Yes, absolutely.
Normally, I don't really like that anyway, so whatever. Spider-Geddon, number zero. The Spider event of 2018 starts here.
Oh, no, I didn't get this.
Don't worry, because this book was the introduction of the star of Spider-Man, the PS4 video game, making his comic book debut.
Oh, wow.
So, which is something I know does not appeal to you at all. I finished the Spider-Man PS4 game, and I was like, oh, what are they going to do with this slight variation on Peter Parker? He pretty much just has a different costume. That's the only difference between him and regular Peter Parker in the comic books.
Are his parents spies?
Apparently all Peter Parker's parents are spies, but we don't explicitly know from this one. Christos Gage wrote this one with art by Clayton Crane, which is a great name.
It's a good name.
And this kind of just sets up an adventure in the PS4 Spider-Man's world, in which he is visited by Octavius, the superior Spider-Man, and tells him that he needs to come with him to save all the multiverses, and it's a spider thing. Whatever. It's like, you know what's going to happen. It's fun.
Cool.
Then there's some crazy shit going on with the punk Spider-Man and stuff.
Such a good Spider-Punk cosplayer at Comic-Con.
Really? I didn't see it.
It was amazing. It was really good. Hobie? Lynn from King's got a picture.
Okay, cool.
With him. She said he has good muscles.
She'll have to post it in the Serious Issues Facebook group, which you can join at facebook.com/groups/Serious Issues Podcast. This is this is not remarkable in any way, but I think this Spider-Geddon event is going to be dumb and fun.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, all of the Spider-Verse. Like, I should hate the Spider-Verse. I just spent a big thing complaining about how lazy some of the versions are in a different event universe thing, but I like the Spider-Geddon ones.
Because they have spider powers. And that makes everyone interesting.
Because the Spider-Man costume is perfect, and I want to see it in a million variations.
That's a good point. You should get the Spider-Man game, because they allow you to do exactly that.
I'm definitely going to get it at some point in my life.
We also got, finally from Marvel, the first annual, so Domino Annual number one, which has been written by many creators. That's kind of led by regular writer Gail Simone. But then we've also got Fabian Nisi... I don't know, how do you say this dude's name? Fabian... Nishiza.
That's not right.
Dennis Hopeless, Leah Williams, Victor Ibanez on art with Juan Gedeon, Leonard Kirk, Natasha Bustos, and Michael Shelfer. And this was kind of like a bunch of stories about of Domino either like meeting her teammates for the first time or having an adventure with them at some point in her life.
It was cute.
It was cute.
It was cute and funny. And the last story about mutants who don't pass as human having a little support group was great.
Yeah, yeah, that was fun. Led by Nightcrawler. Anything led by Nightcrawler is okay by me.
I love how Gail Simone just, like, comes onto a character and is like, they're a sassy broad now, deal with it. but I like her version of Domino.
There was, there were a few writers that didn't write the same version of Domino that Gail's writing, and it was pretty jarring to go back and forth from that. There's that one of her and Cable in the bath together.
Yeah, that was weird.
That was a weird story.
Anyway. I wouldn't want to have a bath with Cable. Would he have to put his whole arm in, like, a big plastic bag, like when you have a broken arm?
Or, like,
because you wouldn't want to get all that machinery wet, right?
Yeah, or he'd electrocute you like a toaster in the bath with, right?
Nate just said it's a techno-organic virus, it's not machinery. So.
Fuck off, Nate.
So that tells me.
Ask him if Cable's arm can toast bread.
Can Cable's arm toast bread? He looks really angry.
Success. let's talk about Valiant Comics now, Siobhan.
All right.
We have two number ones from Valiant this week.
Okay, one I didn't them... read either.
All right, so one of them was The Aftermath of Harbinger Wars 2.
Oh, okay. I didn't get to it. It's in my book.
Written by Matt Kent with art by Adam Polina and Diego Rodriguez. This is kind of like wrapping up the loose ends of all of the not-mutants, the Psyots, on the run from the government because of the actions of Livewire, in which she killed hundreds of soldiers at the end of the last issue of Harbinger Wars 2.
But really, they deserved it.
Yeah, but now she's public enemy number one. She has like weird internet sex, but real sex with Ninjak. But it's like there's like code behind her when she does
like
it and stuff.
In the internet, like in the 90s. Oh,
yeah, there's flying toasters.
Valiant's great.
Yeah, I don't know about that one for this issue. This is a pretty dumb issue and a bad way to wrap up a pretty subpar event.
Mm. At least now it's over and we can all move on.
Yeah, but all of these new series that we're going to read, except you, over the next few weeks, all tie into Harbinger Wars. Just like Faith Dreamside, number one, written by the same writer who's written Faith since the beginning, Jody Hauser, with art by MJ Kim and Jordy Belair. And this is kind of like a, not quite business as usual Faith comic, but basically like she's also hiding out after being framed for murder in her last series. This sees her kind of like team up with someone who can essentially Beast Boy, but in the Valiant universe.
What's he called?
She is called. But basically, she kidnaps Faith as a kaiju, so that already that's a lot better than anything great. Beast Boy would ever do. Animalia is her name.
Also great. It's like that children's book. Great.
Yeah, a great Graham Bass children's book. 10 out of 10. One of my favorite books. Although, The 11th Hour is my favorite Graham Bass book. You read that one?
No.
All these animals are invited to a birthday party, but one of the animals eats all of the cakes, and you have to work out which animal it was. And it's really, really cool. It's like all kinds of crazy shit to find in each picture.
That does sound cool.
Good books. Even though this is like probably the best Faith issue I've read, because there was no like incessant pop culture references and all that kind of stuff. I still don't really need to read any more of it because it's not a character that I find that interesting.
No, me neither.
But she was much more bearable when... Actually, no, I really liked the Faith in the Future Force series that Jody Hauser did. That was good. Bring that back. Dark Horse this week. Did you read Gamma number one?
Okay, I really tried.
Bro, I'm with you on this 100%.
That's hard. That was
fucking
hard work.
Hell. So this is written by Ulysses Farinas and Eric Freitas, who, if you've listened to the podcast, you know we love them. They're like some of our favorite creators. Gave us great books like Motro and Claudia and Rex, which is even referenced in this issue. It has a great artist on this book. Melody Offen is their name. Based on name alone, that's a fantastic artist. But her art, also excellent. The art is by Ulysses Farinas. Which should make me like it even more, but it's Melody Offen on colors. Great colors, though.
Beautiful colors.
But
it is, you know what? If I was a teenager and this was the only comic book that I bought that week, this would have been like the best shit of all time to me. And I think it might still be the best shit of all time. I just might be too old and have too many comics to read for it to be an acceptable part of my life right now. Because this is dense.
Every page has about 20 panels on it. and each panel has
so
about
much work.
Four word balloons in it. But it moves. It doesn't actually move that quickly. It's really,
and it also
really
jumps
dense.
Around.
It jumps around. There's two different narrators that are having a conversation with each other.
Three.
Yeah. Essentially it's about like battling
Pokemon?
Monsters, kind of Pokemon thing. I should like this. I feel terrible that I don't, but I just found it really, really hard to get into.
It was like, it's a mashup of it's Pokemon references and then Power Rangers references and then all these other references, and you're like, whoa, this is just some kind of insane fever dream of the video games that you like or something.
Yeah, I would compare it a lot to that Joe Casey was it Ulysses Farinas on that one too? The one it's called New Lieutenants of Metal?
Yeah, exactly.
Who was that? Ulysses Farinas on that too. Yeah, a book that I should like that I just don't.
Yeah.
I think that's fine. I love Ulysses Farinas normally, and this was not my thing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Also not my thing just because I've not watched all of it, and I was like, why should I read any of it? Stranger Things, another Jodie Houser number one this week. Did you give it a shot?
I didn't pick it up. No. Is it just an adaptation? I thought it was just an adaptation of the show, and I've seen the show. So
I thought it was extra stuff. Was it?
Oh, I don't know.
Will Byers is missing. The town of Hawkins, Indiana, including Will's best friends and family, scour the area looking for him. What they don't know is that he's lost in the Upside Down, an impossible dark parody of his own world. All right, yeah, shit. So it is just maybe it's a bonus adventure or something. I don't know. Who could say? Not me. I didn't read it. Neither did Siobhan. That's why we're the best comic book podcast on the internet.
Absolutely.
You know what I loved this week? Possibly as much as I loved, if not more than, Maneaters.
Whoa.
Was a comic published by Vault this week, Vault Comics, and it was called Fearscape.
When I first saw this, I thought it was Farscape.
Yep. Fearscape is a very literary comic published by written by Ryan O'Sullivan with art by Andrea Muti and colors by Vladimir Popov.
What has Ryan O'Sullivan written?
The name is vaguely familiar. I can look it up for you. Well, you tell us what it's about.
Oh, God.
Okay, I can do it. I can do both.
You can do both? Phew. Thank goodness. It's about a terrible writer who steals someone else's muse when they're in a coma and ends up in a sort of literary afterlife. Is that about right?
Yep, and it's written by Ryan O'Sullivan, who wrote Void Trip, which was an Image miniseries that we really liked.
Yeah.
It was like a space kind of journey with
Stoner,
two funny
road trip.
Drug taking. Yeah, that was cool. Cool book. Cool book. But yeah, we have this this bad writer who steals his employer's manuscripts, and also in this issue steals his muse when the muse appears for his employer, who is a famous fantasy writer, instead is stolen by our hack, who is like a translator, but who is like forever working on a novel that he'll never even start. The book is narrated by that same writer, the translator, and so it's untrustworthy. It's also really egotistical and constantly addressing us and saying how good we are for reading a book about him, and makes fun of people using 9-panel grid layouts like The Watchmen, which was very appealing, and it's just really, really funny throughout. We'll introduce you as a character really positively, and then when that character does something mean to the main character, suddenly changes the way they talk about that character in the narration boxes.
This is
really,
an example
really
of something being incredibly wordy, but it works for it because it's part of the character.
Absolutely.
It's funny and it's not intrusive and it's not overwhelming.
Well, it was all of the extra words added to the story instead of saying what art could. Extra narration was absolutely an extra storytelling device that was used really, really well in a way I've not seen that many of experienced that often in comic books. I thought it was awesome.
Yeah, really good.
This and Maneaters are my two favorite number ones, and probably two of my favorite books that I read this week. It's a cool surprise.
There was another great comic out from Vault as well, though.
This one was weird as hell.
I liked Frendo.
Me too. It was still weird as fuck, though. Frendo was his name. It was written by Alex Packnadel, illustrated by Martin Simmons, and colours by Dee Kniff. You take this one, Siobhan.
So this follows a young man who is the son of a street preacher. And when he grows up, he does sort of weirdo insurance scams in some kind of near-future dystopia.
Yeah. He's like some California dickhead.
And the latest, like, tech thing, wearable tech thing, is a pair of glasses that has an artificial intelligence in it called Frendo. And it, like, changes itself to fit what it thinks you need or what you want.
So when this guy, our main character, is not doing, insurance scams, he's a stripper?
Yes.
Or a dancer, and he and his crew dress up as, like, stripper versions of everyone in The Wizard of Oz.
That is pretty good.
And after learning that they're not going to get paid for their work that night in the club, they exit and walk through like a deadly dust storm.
Because it's the future, the near future, and global warming has turned Los Angeles into an unlivable hellhole, even more so.
Yep. After relying on his new Frendo, his AI that lives in his glasses, he loses his friends and then cops a knife to the back from a homeless person panning for gold in the dust and then gets electrocuted, and that's the end of the issue.
Yep. I like it.
Me too. This is weird as fuck, and in a way that I feel like a lot of books have been trying to do lately, this was like really, really weird for the sake of being weird, but also was fun.
Yeah. I thought it was also like, I mean, it's I wonder if this is going to be an ongoing character, or if this is going to be a little bit Twilight Zone-y, and we'll get Ice Cream Man-y, I should say, which got picked up for a TV show or something.
Really? But, Frendo? Sick.
No, not Frendo.
Oh, Ice Cream Man did. Really? Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah. Fuck yeah.
Yeah, I'm happy for those guys. So I'd be interested to see, like, the various ways that this technology is evil for people or whatever.
Who will Frendo make Frendos with next?
Exactly. Because I don't know how our hero gets through this one otherwise. But I liked this. I thought this was good fun, and I thought the art was cool.
Yeah, great week for Vault. In fact, just to go back quickly to Fearscape, I thought this book was way more fun than what we've seen from the new Sandman books so far. And in doing like a similar kind of very literary, like reference-y.
Yeah, but everyone in the Sandman universe is trying to do a bit of a
Neil Gaiman light version. Yeah, but this felt entirely its own thing. Almost like, I guess, the closest to like The Unwritten or something like that, because like the muses appear from this realm of imagination and require writers to fight actual monsters in there. So cool. I can't wait to see where this goes.
Very cool. Finally, both are doing great things.
Have you got any more number ones?
I read something called High Heaven.
Me too. This has came out through Ahoy Comics, which I talked about. A comic written by the same writer a couple weeks ago called The Wrong Earth, which was like a multiverse kind of superhero book. This one is written by, what's his name? Tom Payer, with art by Greg Scott, colors by Andy Troy. And it's about a dude who dies after being told he should ask out a girl from his work, and then learns that the girl is engaged to the guy who told him to ask her out. Anyway, then he gets crushed by a piano and finds out that heaven is not what he was expecting it to be. I like this a lot.
Yeah, I like this a lot. This was funny. It took me, for some reason, it took me a while to figure out what the hell was going on. But I did enjoy this. I like this sort of, you get to heaven and it's just this horrible sort of bureaucratic nightmare, and you live in a shithole.
A shithole that everyone calls a mansion.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Then you don't even have genitals.
Yep.
Good fun.
Yep. This was fun. High heaven. This publisher, Ahoy Comics, is a fun little surprise every time I put something out.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
So many cool new publishers at the moment.
And every comic they put out has an essay by Grant Morrison at the back.
It's my perfect world.
Except you don't like Grant Morrison essays, right?
You
like the idea of them. You said last time I brought them up, you're like, I hate Grant Morrison essays. Everyone heard that, Siobhan. You can't take that back. No takesy backies.
I liked the one where he wrote about chaos magic, but it wasn't. It was a question and answer with himself.
Good.
He interviewed himself. That was good.
Awesome. So that's it for First Things First this week. We're going to move rapidly through the rest of these reviews. Let's start with Image next, Siobhan, because Image put out one book that I read.
I didn't read any Image books.
Oh, you've given up on Shanghai Red.
I just didn't get to it. It's on my to get to pile. This week was tough, guys.
It was. Shanghai Red. Christopher Sabella writes this one with art by Joshua Hickson. This is the kind of like pirate revenge story in which after being shanghaied and waking up on a boat in which she has to work as a slave for 2 years, a girl who masquerades as a man returns to her hometown to seek revenge and finds that so much has changed in the years that she's been away, including the job of her sister. And in this, we've met a woman who runs, like the only woman who runs her own bar in the town. And of course, all the men in the town are looking for any excuse to burn that bar down. And that is exactly how this issue ends. So it looks like the next issue is going to be this fantastic fight issue, and I can't wait.
Cool.
It's a cool book. Don't drop this one, Siobhan. It's a good one.
Check. On
I
it.
Like this one. That's it for Image, unless you read any more Image.
No. Weird week.
Who put out the next least? Obviously, it was DC, because Marvel always put out way too many fucking books. And I feel like I read
more DC.
Let's see. That's where we go. Do you want to pick a DC book to start with?
Should we just start with Doomsday Clock and get it out of the way?
Guess what, everybody? The big blue dong is back, baby!
Not big enough.
Not big enough. Dr. Manhattan's dong and the rest of his body show up finally in the 7th issue of this 12-issue miniseries by Geoff Johns and Gary Frank. Gary Frank draws the fucking hell out of this book.
It's just so hard not to like this book because of Gary Frank.
Yep. Who does colors on this one? Brad Anderson. Great colors as well. Mm-hmm, a particularly well-colored Joker. I love the Joker. Mm. I'm not usually a Joker fan, but he's just so nutty and fun in this.
I love Gary Frank's Joker.
Yep.
Perfect.
Has cool hair. But yeah, this is finally the kind of... like we still haven't seen the Superman versus Dr. Manhattan kind of team-up / fight that this event promised, but we get inches closer to that goal. And this is a mostly enjoyable issue.
I sort of like this now.
I still don't understand the point of it, but I think that, you know, some comics don't need to have one. Yeah, give me this over Heroes in Crisis any fucking day.
Yeah, for sure. We haven't really talked about the plot, but
does it matter?
You're probably reading it, guys.
Yeah, I think this does this. Like, they do a lot more with a 9-panel grid layout here than Tom King has done recently, too. It makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Gary Frank's art is so, like, the variety of facial expression is so amazing that I don't care if it's one person's face 9 times in a panel. Not that he even does that in this book, but...
I love when the Joker puts like a flamethrower between his legs.
And yeah,
is that a flamethrower in your pocket, or are you just happy to see me? And I'm like, oh yeah, this is the PG-13 book that I wanted Geoff Johns to write all along. A flamethrowing dick joke.
Yeah, I love it.
So yeah, a really good issue of Doomsday Clock.
Yeah, great.
What's next? Should we do the New Age of Heroes?
Yeah, let's do it.
Issue 8 of the Terrifics sees Dale Eaglesham on art duties, and a very good fit. Very, very good fit for the book. This is our team of Mr. Terrific, Phantom Girl, Mr. Plastic Man, and Metamorpho team up with Tom Strong and help him try to find his family who are lost somewhere in across all these different multiverses, I guess, some universes. And so the team all splits up and goes to try and find them in all these like fun kind of different genre universes. So like Plastic Man goes into like somewhere called Funny Land.
It's like Looney Tunes
stuff, and at the end of each of these worlds they find someone who kind of like resembles someone from the Tom Strong family that's going to help them, except for Tom Strong and Mr. Terrific themselves, who end up in Gotham City and become entangled in the vines of Swamp Thing.
Great.
And he showed up now. I guess he's gonna put some moss on him.
Oh, no.
Moss on these fools. His stinky butt moss. Yeah, Jeff Lemire doing kind of fun, kind of throwback superhero stuff. It's a good book.
Yeah, I like it.
Eaglesham's a good fit.
You know what else was good?
Yeah, we're going to get to that. New Age of Heroes book, Siobhan. The Silencer is, though. Did you not read Silencer this week?
No, I missed it.
Patch Zercher is still the artist on this book, which is not quite as good as Victor Bogdanovich.
Yeah, I'm not that
But
mad.
It is a good job. Dan Abnett, of course, the writer of this one, and Mike Spicer on colors. This is our surprise favorite of the New Age of Heroes DC line, about one of Talia al Ghul's old assassins, who has become a mother and wants to live a quiet life, but her old life has come calling back. She is a silencer, and she can click cones of silence, and so no one can hear her kill her prey. But she has swapped bodies with a enormous, like technologically advanced assassin, because there's magic afoot. The magic arm of Leviathan, which is the organization that Talia al Ghul runs, is proving that they're not a joke. And this was fun. I had like a massive like body count of as heaps of like different assassins die. And a monster is set loose on the theme park that Silence's family is hanging out at.
Cool.
It's really fun. This is a really fun book. I really like it.
Yeah, I'm sad I missed that.
And I think Zurch's art was a step up from the last issue too. He draws a good monster.
Cool.
Yeah. Now we can talk about the book that you want to talk about, Siobhan, which is...
Action Comics, issue 1003.
By Brian
Michael Bendis. Who I've always said is great. and Yannick Paquette on art.
You definitely have always said he's great.
Yeah, absolutely.
Great colours by Nathan Fairbairn as well. This is my preferred of the Superman books that Bat Bendis is doing at the moment. Not just because he has done it so far with Patrick Gleason on art and now Yannick Paquette, who are two of my favourite DC artists, but also because he just has a lot of fun with this one, and you can see so... On the first page, it's just littered with fun little Easter eggs as we see a close-up of, what's his name, from the Daily Planet's desk, Perry White's desk. There's, like, weird, like, pitches, like, for new series that Bendis wants to write, but it's Perry pitching them to other magazines and stuff like that. And then there's, like, fun post-it notes and weird little, like, there's a picture of Bendis himself in a filing, in a pile of notes. It's fun. Just super fun.
Just
but enough
fun.
About the Easter eggs. What happens in the book, Siobhan?
Someone's bought kryptonite. It's bad news for old Clark Kent.
And I love the, you know, Clark Kent, he gets sick and can't move because someone brings kryptonite into his room. And he calls on an old friend to get the kryptonite off his coworker, and that old friend is Batman. And there's some brilliant... kind of scenes between the two of them. He gets their friendship more so than Tom King does. Like, yeah.
More than a whole issue of them awkwardly going to the fair together.
But this is a great issue.
Mm-hmm. And like so beautifully illustrated, and I love the sort of underlying plot that Bendis is developing with this other journalist. I think it's really good.
And his weird threat of the Red Cloud, who's a super horrific killer who kills with Red Cloud powers. This is just a ton of fun.
Yeah, so good. Into it. And Lex, we still don't even really know what's going on with Lois. He like teased that at the end of the last issue and then skipped forward and hasn't told us anything.
I'm into it. Go Bendis, go. Do your Bendis-y stuff.
Absolutely.
Bend it like Bendis. We're calling the episode that now.
No.
Hooray! hey, I'm reading Wonder Woman still. I like it a lot.
Good, right? What a good issue.
Wonder Woman 55, written by Steve Orlando with art by Raul Allen. Colors by, I'm going to guess, Laura Martin. Laura Martin got fine colors. But this is like her teaming up with, what are their names again, Siobhan?
They're Amazons.
Artemis. And Atalanta.
Yes.
And,
to take down, what's this dude's name? I always forget.
Patricia Martin is the artist on this one. Sorry, Laura. You don't get a shout out this time. Borgia Pindado does colors on this one.
Mm.
But it was like them fighting that guy with the red hot sword, Rustum.
Rustum, yeah, there you go.
And there's a kind of like fun kind of gotcha moment because Wonder Woman has like a second lasso, which allows people. It's like it's pretty much the same thing, really. But this one's on fire.
Cooler.
She gives it to Artemis at the end. The Golden Promise. What's it called? The Lasso of Submission.
Yeah. I like how much Steve Orlando is like going into all of the funny classic William M. Marston submission and bondage-y stuff. But it really works. Like, you really get it in this. I think he really understands really well. The character.
Yep. Agree. This is a cool issue.
Great. I love it.
He's just sticking around for a few more issues yet, so pick it up. They're fun little short stories written by a writer who is coming into his own, I think.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Finally, Batman Detective Comics came out this week. 988, written by James Robinson. He's doing a short stint on Detective Comics before Patrick Gleason and his usual collaborator.
Did you get both issues?
Two issues came out this week?
I think Kings was shorted. I also read 989.
Okay, cool. Steven Segovia did art on this one with colors by Ivan Placencia. I'll have to steal your copy of this when you hand it back.
Same on both issues.
Cool.
Really classic looking Batman book. Very 90s, I think.
It says so on the front cover. It says a simple murder or a burning secret. And I think simple is the key word to take away here.
Yeah.
This is devoid of like an endless list of teammates and, you know, it has like slight references to things that have happened in Bruce's life recently, but mostly it was just about him trying to take down Firefly, and the new protege of Firefly, and save all these people from dying in a burning down house. While he talks to Alfred, it was really really fun.
And the next issue is like just him solving a murder, helping out Commissioner Gordon, finding some classic Batman bad guys.
I'm into it.
James Robinson.
Yeah, James Robinson doing a classic. Who would have thought that James Robinson could pull off a classic feeling comic book?
Absolutely. I read two more DC books as well.
Oh, tell me about them.
Okay, so I read issue 27 of Batgirl, and this is Batgirl: Art of the Crime back in Gotham. Babs is back in Gotham, written by May Reed Scott, with Paul Pelletier on pencils, Norm Rapmund on inks, and Jordi Belair on colors. And in this, stuff's going wrong with Babs's implant, the thing that the reason she can walk again.
Oh, no, not her boobs.
No. They're leaking. No. With her
that
brain
would be
implant.
Amazing. Someone write that story.
You know, imagine if, have you ever seen when ladies get butt implants and the butt implants flip?
Oh,
and then they're like inside.
Okay, pitch that. Which superhero gets butt implants?
Green Arrow. Nightwing. Green definitely Arrow. Definitely Nightwing.
Okay. No, Green Arrow to try and be as hot as Nightwing.
Yes.
I can totally see Oliver Queen has the bank to do it.
He does. He does.
Or Booster Gold. That works too.
Yep. I like it.
And then it flips. I love it.
But so this is like... it's a funny comic because it's a bit like... it's hard to say what's going on in Babs's head and what's going on in the real world. But she's back in her original costume and she's trying to solve a murder. And then the guy that she thought was doing the murder shows up murdered. And she's been framed for his murder. Oh my goodness. Babs, you should have stayed out of Gotham. But I liked it. It's good. I think that... Married Scott really seems to understand Babs as a character in a couple of core ways. There are some good moments between her and Commissioner Gordon. It's okay, fun cool. seeing her in the classic costume.
Her dad.
I like it. It's like a proper detective book as well.
What else did you read?
I read Batman Kings of Fear, issue 2.
Oh yeah, fuck the Kelly Jones jam.
Yeah, written, I can't think of who writes it, but who cares? Oh, it's Scott Peterson. But
written in front
the
of
main point is art by Kelly Jones, king of a big, solid, fleshy Bane and mad pointy ears.
The pointiest in the game.
The pointiest in the game. And this is just like, again, this is like getting into a warm nostalgia bath. And I love it. It's Batman versus the Scarecrow and all kinds of crazy Kelly Jones shit happens because he's tripping Scarecrow balls.
What?
Well, because he's been fear gassed.
Oh,
so
right.
It's again, it's another like, what in the fuck is going on in this comic? Because he thinks he's fighting people, and then he's fighting Commissioner Gordon. But Commissioner Gordon catches his fist in his hand. Did that happen in a different comic, or did that happen in this? I can't remember. I've read too many comics this week. No, yep. It did happen in this. Anyway, it's great, and Kelly Jones is the best. Look how good that is.
Do any? Oh, that was fantastic.
Mm.
Do any implants get flipped in this book?
Only his heart. No, I don't know.
The biggest implant of all. Those are our DC reviews. Let's move over to Marvel now. For what was I guess it shouldn't be surprising, but I was still surprised. My favorite issue of the week. Chip Zdarsky's last issue of Peter Parker, The Spectacular Spider-Man. Run that had some highlights, especially recently with that great Sandman two-parter he did with Bacello. But this is a book that is not... This issue, sorry, is not just written by Chip Zdarsky. It's also drawn and coloured by him.
I wish he could do a whole graphic novel. You know, I wouldn't expect him to do a monthly book by himself, but do a graphic novel, Chip.
We don't know what he's doing next.
He's good at Spider-Man.
Apparently, he has three unannounced Marvel projects. So that'll be good when those are announced.
Mm.
But anyway, this is... this is what we got this week, 310 of Peter Parker, The Spectacular Spider-Man. And it is in the same way that Dan Slott did his, like, I guess it was like issue 800 of Amazing Spider-Man. It's a farewell and celebration of the character. And I thought this was, like, I loved the Slott one.
Mm-hmm.
I love this one even more. This was, like, there's a kid that in New York who is making a documentary about Spider-Man by interviewing various people in the neighborhood about what they think of the friendly neighborhood Spider-Man. And so we have that talking heads thing as, like, you know, we get some very, like, you know, some funny answers and then some profound answers. And then we'll explore over, you know, a page or two exactly what certain people are talking about when they reference things that happened involving Spider-Man in their lives. And some of them are like, you know, why the hot dog cart guy now has to give Spider-Man a free hot dog every day because he saved his life. And when he said so, he thought it was the right thing to do, but he didn't actually expect Spider-Man to show up every single day for a free hot dog and annoy the hot dog vendor. And then there's way more serious things like that, like Spidey stops a boy who was in the wrong place at the wrong time, and the first thing he ever did with a group of criminals. And then that story ends up going quite dark when we revisit his mother. And it's done so in a way that, like, I feel like I've taken a lot of shots at Tom King this week, but whatever, that's what happens when you write the main...
See, now I've got to come back around and like Tom King again, because now everyone hates him.
If anyone does that, it's you. But I thought this did the very, very heavy themes alongside like your regular superhero stuff in a way that I've, in a really, really like mature and entertaining way that I feel has been lacking in a lot of books that have tried to do it recently.
And there's nothing that's like, it's always going to be a wonderful special issue when it's a writer, and especially if it's someone who's doing the art themselves, getting to do just a love letter to a character who means a lot to them.
Yeah.
And that's what comes through in this. And it's really nice. And I wish he'd drawn more issues.
Definitely. I'm, you know, he's writing a ton of stuff and drawing sex criminals. He's busy. He's a busy boy. He's also maintaining the best Twitter profile on the internet.
He's a very funny man.
He's my favorite. But yeah, this is an absolutely brilliant issue. Even if you've not read any of the series so far, just pick this up. If you love Spidey, guess what? So does Chip, and he wrote a perfect Spider-Man story for you to enjoy.
It's a great standalone issue.
It's brilliant. Brilliant stuff. Let's keep things Spidey-ish for a moment. We'll talk about The Amazing Spider-Man issue number 6 this week, written by Nick Spencer with art by Humberto Ramos. Doing a good job, but he's not Ryan Ottley, and that hurt a little bit.
But I love, like, I'll always love Ramos on Spider-Man. I just do. Yeah, it just works.
He belongs
for me.
In the book. Victor Olazaba on inks and Edgar Delgado on colors. I really enjoyed this issue because finally we see an issue starring Boomerang, who is now Spidey's roommate. And who, of course, was the kind of star of Superior Foes of Spider-Man, which was the first kind of Nick Spencer series that I really enjoyed. This was really, really fun kind of catching up with him in this book. And he takes Peter Parker, he doesn't know that he's Spidey, to the bar with no name, which is the bar that all the criminals hang out at, because it's trivia night, and this week's trivia night is all about Spider-Man. And of course, Peter Parker knows everything about Spider-Man and wins. And
pretty fun.
Really, really fun and funny issue. One of Spencer's stronger kind of comedy issues that I've read in a long time.
Yeah, I wish he'd stop trying to just force these characters that he loves on everyone, but he does write them in a fairly.
You're the only person I know who doesn't like Boomerang.
Who doesn't like Boomerang? Stop trying to make me like him. but I did enjoy this. This was good fun.
Did you read Edge of Spider-Geddon, issue number 4?
No, why did I miss so many Spidey books? I like all these dumb things.
This is a book written and drawn by Aaron Kuda. Extra art by Will Robson, who's another one that you like. Featuring inks by Craig Jung and colours by Andre Mossa. This was basically another version of Spider-Man. In somewhere in the multiverse is a Spidey who is Norman Osborn as Spider-Man.
Ooh, that sounds cool.
Yeah, and it was cool. It was like a fun little story of Norman Osborn and Harry Osborn, basically like fighting using spider powers. Fun shit.
Mm.
And then of course, like all these issues, Hobie the punk spider punk shows up and whisks him away into the Spider-Verse, and we get closer and closer to Spider-Geddon. I think Superior Octopus is what we get next, which comes out this week.
Yes, please. Fun. Great.
This is a fun event, but it was cool seeing. I love Kuda's art, and having him and Will Robson together was actually a cool match.
Yeah, that's really
their
cool.
Their styles are well suited. Another Marvel book that I loved this week was The Sentry, issue number 4 by Jeff Lemire. This is the issue in which I realized I love Kim Jacinto.
Real great.
I fucking
art.
Loved the art in this issue. This is the kind of fun kind of the Sentry is like has to be his like regular schlubby super powerless self in New York and work in a diner, and then at night he goes home and fights like a virtual reality version. He is the Sentry in a virtual reality version of New York. And fights his like the dark side of himself, the void, and after a whole bunch of crazy shit's going on over the last few issues, they saw him kind of face to face with the void, and normally that is seen as a extremely bad thing for all of the Marvel universe, but Lemire put a really cool positive spin on it.
Mm-hmm,
I hope
mm-hmm.
it might turn out to be not positive, but this is fucking cool.
But also, this is like again not to exclusively rag on Tom King, but this is a great way. This is a really good way to explore, like, mental health issues using the genre of superhero comics.
Yep.
Good job, Jeff Lemire.
Yeah, very good. Super good issue. Black Panther, issue number 4, came out this week also. Did you miss this one too?
I did a genuinely terrible job of picking up comics this week. And I read so flippin' many.
Written by Ta-Nehisi Coates with art by Daniel Acuna. This just continues the intergalactic Empire of Wakanda storyline, which looks incredible. I don't think is anywhere near as interesting as the last arc of Ta-Nehisi Coates' Black Panther run, but it feels like it's building up towards something great. But this was very much a slowly building issue as opposed to a startling revelation or, you know, great character moment based issue. I still liked it.
Cool.
Why don't you tell me a book that you did read, Siobhan?
I read X-Men Red.
Me too. X-Men
Red? What a good cover.
Great cover of
these Jenny Frisson covers are very, very good. She's very good.
Have you ever read a book with Jenny Frisson interiors?
I don't think she does interiors.
Would love to see one.
Yeah, she did all those amazing Buffy covers for a billion years. Right. Always tricked me into reading Buffy. You got me.
So this is the book in which Tom Taylor, the writer, made a reference to Nauru, which as an Australian, I was like, hell yeah, Tom Taylor, you're the fucking best.
Yeah, totally. Wait, where was that?
On page 3, when the newsreaders are talking, there's a all the headlines below.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
Hey, yeah.
Pretty cool stuff, Tom Taylor.
Good job, Tom Taylor.
Great art on this one by Carmen Canero as well. Mm-hmm. As we see Jean Grey and her team try and take down Cassandra Nova using psychic powers, and I love a good psychic battle in an X-Men
absolutely.
Book. And this was absolutely one of those.
It was absolutely one of those. I wish that Forge would wake up. Forge is being capped by Cassandra Nova, and I love Forge.
Yeah?
Make Forge good again.
Where does he rank?
Oh, number one. Number
really?
One. He's my favorite X-Men. No, I don't know. 6. Forge
ask
is
Nate,
number 6.
Ask Nate where Forge is on his...
What number is Forge for you, Nate?
Where does Forge rank?
6.
6? 6. Great.
I was right. You know who has a really cool Gambit tattoo? Is Maria Lewis.
Was one of... No, I didn't notice that. No, Maria Lewis was one of the panelists on Siobhan's comic book communities panel that I was also a guest on. And she is a genre writer. She was really, really good guest.
Yeah.
She was selling novels. Keeping things X-rated for a moment, Extermination, issue number 3. This is the Ed Brisson X-Men event that is going to finally send the time-displaced X-Men back to where they came from. Pepe Larraz on art with Marte Gracia on colors. This is just dumb nonsense and it's fun and I don't care. I read it and I'm like, this is stupid as hell. There's like a young Cable and...
Did you just say that out loud to no one?
This yeah, is yeah.
stupid as hell.
No, I tap someone on the shoulder, shove the comic in their face and go, this is stupid as hell. Cable's young now. yeah.
Does he still have gray hair?
It's like silver. Yeah, I just love that they're sending these mutants back to their original timeline in the dumbest way possible. It's great.
Well, how are they doing it?
Just like really, really drawn out. Every issue, one of them gets kidnapped by the young Cable, and then the others are like, "Damn it! This keeps happening every 24 pages."
Can someone put a lock on the door or something?
Moon Knight, issue number 199. Did you read it?
I did. I don't heaps care, though.
Yeah, Max Bemis wrote this one with art by Paul Davidson. I like Paul Davidson's art just because it's just like unlike anything else I've seen on a Marvel book.
Yeah, it's real weird. It's like it looks British.
Yeah, definitely looks like a 2008 really artist, for sure.
Yeah.
Matt Miller on colors. This is like kind of like the penultimate... issue by Bemis, kind of bringing to an end the chapter involving this character of Ernst, a new figure from Moon Knight's past.
And his Nazi uncle.
The journey to get here was really riveting, but I found this issue kind of just annoying.
Yeah.
But there's a big reveal at the end, the return of the character that we were introduced to at the start of Max Bemis's run.
The Sun King.
That was cool.
Yeah, that was cool.
So I'm still on board. One more issue to go.
Couldn't hurt.
While we're talking about things that are moons, how about Moon Girl?
Whoa, that was very slick.
Thanks so much. Moon Girl is a great Sieg.
It was a good Sieg.
Siegway. issue 35 of Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur came out this week, written by Brandon Montclair with art by Natasha Bustos and colors by Tamara Bonvillain. And this was just an absolute joy to read as Lunella and a humanified Devil Dinosaur, aka mm-hmm. Devon Dinosaur, try to take down the Wrecking Crew. It just felt really classic and fun.
Yeah, absolutely.
I love any book that the Wrecking Crew show up in.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Especially an all-ages one. And this is great. Natasha Bustos is just such a good artist.
Absolutely. It's just, like, I love the princess... What's her name? Princess Fisk.
Yep.
Wilson Fisk's new adoptive daughter, who's the new villain at school.
Yep. She's great. And Natasha Bustos got to design a new character. So, speculators, you should pick this issue up and make these creators rich. Because Thunderball is now part of the Black Panther mm-hmm. crew. There's a new member of the Wrecking Crew, and her name is Demolisher, and she has an awesome big long ponytail attached to a wrecking ball.
That is very cool.
Very great.
Although potentially painful.
I was into it. Those are all the Marvel books I read. Did you read any that I did not?
I read Scarlet.
That's not Marvel. That's DC.
Oh. Well, I read that. Oh, I forgot. I forgot Bendis's. It was fine. I don't really need to talk about it. So good thing I'm not going to.
I don't think we got Marvel 2-in-1. The final issue of that came out, and we did not get it. Siobhan got it.
Did you read it? I did. I just didn't want to talk about it because I got confused and I thought maybe it was last week and I forgot about it last week. But it turns out that it was this week. And it was, again, like... This is written by Chip Zdarsky with art by Ramon Perez, and it's not Ramon Perez's best work, just because it's super rushed. And this is a sort of awkward tying up of this Johnny and Ben in an alternate universe, and it's like they're saved by A, Sue, and Reed, but I'm not sure whether it's their Sue and Reed. Anyway, it's all fine, and they're back.
Is it kind of undone by the fact that the Fantastic Four comic already exists? Or
yes. Yeah. I mean, it's not undone, but it just doesn't matter.
Yeah, sure. Nothing does.
Nothing does.
Except Fence. Let's talk about other publishers. Don't tell me you didn't read Fence this week.
Did you just see my face when I was like,
yeah, it dropped.
What do you mean? What do you mean Fence came out this week? I didn't get Fence.
Fence issue 10 came out this week. Our beloved boom box book. Written by C.S. Piquet, with Johanna the Mad and Joanna Lafuente on art duties.
It looked like there was going to be smooches in this one.
It's like smooches / fights, and you just have to fill the gaps in yourself. It's great.
What?
It's so much fun. And, Aiden, the hot character, the hot boy that everyone is in love with, we met Aiden's mum, or it's just like the latest woman that his husband that his dad is married to, and so they're like that's way too young to be someone's mom, which is just a great bit of character building.
Oh, man.
We met all the parents because the parents came for the finals as various members of the school fence each other, it's a book about fencing, believe it or not, but great issue, just expertly paced, and I won't spoil what happens, but you'll be very very excited reading this issue. And,
I was like, I only have one other publisher book.
Oh, shit, I forgot to read that one. Damn it, why don't you talk about that?
I read Beasts of Burden, issue 2, Wise Dogs and Eldritch Men, written by Evan Dorkin with art by Benjamin Dewey and Nate Piekos, doing the best job of the characters that Jill Thompson made so great.
Yep.
And this is the occult murder mystery but they're dogs book,
right?
Which always comes out usually around Halloween, and in this there are some horrible creatures with little human faces. They're like raccoons, but then they have horrible little human people faces with runes on their heads. And so our team of dog occult cops have to figure out what's going on, and it's just always such a it's so serious always. Yep. Like, it's played so dead straight, and it's quite violent and quite gory and quite serious, but it's just, you just read it like, oh, doggies the whole time, and it's so gorgeous, and I just always love it. The colors are so beautiful, and these really soft watercolors, and all of the landscapes are really beautiful, and all of the dogs have so much personality. It's just great. I love it.
Awesome. I read an Aftershock book that I really enjoyed, the first issue of, Beyonders, written by Paul Jenkins and Wesley St. Clair, about the like a teenage boy at school who loves cracking codes, and then learns that his aunt and uncle that he lives with are robots, and that his corgi is like a, has like a video camera in his head. Mm. And basically, yeah, he's been integrated into this secret society while another secret society tries to kill him, and is basically handed a code book belonging to Da Vinci. And he finally cracks it at the end of this issue. And it's really fun, you know, if you love like the Da Vinci Code and National Treasure type bullshit. You know, it's okay. You can admit you like it, at least the concept of it.
I love National Treasure.
Me too. I'm a big fan of it. This was a really, really fun kind of take on that kind of book, that also ties into like crop circles and all that kind of stuff. And the main character is a really likable one.
Cool.
It's called Beyonders, out through Aftershock. And finally, Regular Show, 25 years later, in which the main characters of Regular Show, Mordecai and Rigby, accidentally make a deal with a demon and trade their kids for youth. And so they're their regular young, dumb selves again. And they have to try and win their kids back. Super fun. This is written by Christopher Hastings, with really great art. Anna Johnstone and Joanna Lafuente again. Boom put this book out, kaboom. This is just so much more fun than I thought it would be. It's probably like one of my favorite cartoon tie-in comics I've ever read. I put it on par with like the Dan Slott written issues of Ren and Stimpy that Marvel published in the 90s, which is extremely niche high praise. But but this is really, really fun and creative, and I enjoy it immensely.
Yeah, cool.
So that is it for this week. Apologies nice. For how tired we both are. Mm. Next week, I think we might have to record on Tuesday again, but I think it might be the daytime.
Nice.
I'll talk to Siobhan off air. We'll work it out. But thank you so much for listening to Serious Issues.
Thanks,
and support us if you would like to support the show. It's patreon.com/seriousissuespodcast. A couple of bucks a month get you access to a bunch of bonus episodes, one of which we will record another one of very, very soon. And plus, you can rest easy knowing that you are helping some comic-loving parents just do their thing.
Absolutely.
Thank
Everyone
you so much
needs
for
help
listening.
Doing their thing.
And we will see you next week, where we will review... You know, this week is also so brutal. Have you looked at like what's coming out?
No, I haven't.
There's like more than 20 number one issues.
No.
I'll read them out to you now. Batman and the Max, which is written and drawn by Sam Keith, so that'll be fun. Blackbird, Dead Rabbit, Death Orb, Errand Boys, Infinity Wars Sleepwalker, Juke Joint, Lollipop Kids, Lone Ranger, Rainbow Bright, which I know what you're thinking, why the hell would I read that? Because it's written by Jeremy Whitley.
Oh.
Who gave us...
All right.
You like that dude, right?
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I'm sad that I have to read it.
We get Shatterstar, issue number one.
Yes, please.
Sparrowhawk, number one. Spook House 2, number one. Star Wars, Tales from Vader's Castle, number one. Superior Octopus, number one. These Savage Shores, number one, which looks very good. Typhoid Fever, Spider-Man, number one. Umbrella Academy Hotel Oblivion, number one. I return to that series. What If Spider-Man, number one. What If X-Men, number one. Wonder Woman and Justice League Dark, The Witching Hour, number one. And X-Men God. Black Magneto, number one.
Oh, my God.
Yes.
I'm definitely not reading some of those.
So the longest edition of First Things First. I am going to be in Melbourne next week. Maybe I can see if I can get some certain far more famous podcasters to help us out and do a little bit of First Things First with us.
I don't know any more famous podcasters. I thought we were the most famous ones.
I'll let you know. I'll tell you some secrets after we finish recording. But they may have done previous episodes of Serious Issues in the past. Good hint?
Whoa.
Do you know who we're talking about?
No.
Judith Lucy.
Judith Lucy. I love Judith Lucy.
Thank you so much for listening, and go read some comics, and we'll see you next week.
Woo. Thanks, guys.
Bye.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbroadcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates.
I mean, if you want. It's up to you.